Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Page Publishing Book Club. How you doing? I'm Ellis Stockton Rossini. Are you a hypermethylator? Michelle Angelisano and Dr. Terrence Doolin believe the time has come to educate the masses with their book entitled Methylation Madness, Insight into the Biochemical and Personal Lives of Hypermethylators. Dr. Doolin, what is a hypermethylator?
Hypermethylators basically are people who have a problem with a specific type of biochemistry that affects everything from detoxification to neurotransmitter production to moods, emotionality, energy levels, the ability to make tissue. So it kind of protects your DNA. So it's a really important medical concept. The problem that's going on at this point is that everybody's trying to take it down to a very small single point in space and time as a selling point, and that's not the way chemistry works. It's a lot more complex than that. Call it a biochemical malfunction occurring in the system.
I am a hypermethylator. When I was about 24, I started having severe anxiety. I was almost homebound. I just didn't feel well at all. I had very bad stomach issues. And I found Dr. Doolin.
We diagnosed her through a series of blood workups and genetic scans to identify that she did have a hypermethylation. Here's the problem is if you've heard of the MTHFR, MTHFR is one piece of the methylation cycle. So MTHFR has to do with methylation. But the problem with it is it's one pathway out of 16 for folic acid, and it's one pathway out of six for methylation chemistry. So everybody is trying to make the MTHFR gene the most important thing there is when it's not even close. It's just a segment of methylation chemistry problem. This book goes into depth in a lot of the biochemistry of MTHFR and methylation. There's a whole chapter on it, as well as an understanding of what it does symptom-wise and clinically to people through their own story.
How do you treat it?
Depends on which style of hypermethylation you have. There's a bunch of different ones. Usually you would treat it by turning around and reducing methylating foods, taking out things that are methylating agents. And one of the most important things is to be very careful about the medications and things you take, since those can basically become deadly to you.
Which is what happened to me. I had a urinary tract infection and I knew that I was sensitive to sulfur, and I was given a medication which nearly killed me.
And you wouldn't have known that. I mean, I'm thinking generally, do people know anything about this?
It's starting to become more prevalent, but the problem comes down to is, unfortunately, with the internet, people are just reporting things across the board without really understanding what methylation chemistry is.
You talked about foods that would affect someone with this condition.
Right.
What are they?
Some of the biggies that would affect people right off would be things like garlic and onions and fish, peppers, a lot of things that you find in Italian foods and such. If you're a hypermethylator, those are going to affect you very badly.
And that's what happens to me. I'm on a very restricted diet.
What does it do to you?
It'll immediately make me feel kind of like drunk, if you will. I'll get bad heart palpitations.
Instant diarrhea.
Very bad sulfur migraines.
Neck and shoulders stiffen up.
Yeah.
Gas problems, nauseas, and things that you would associate with allergies. But it's not really an allergy as much as it is a metabolic pathway that cannot express properly.
Okay, so is this something doctors routinely check for? No, right?
No, they're just beginning to understand it. And that's part of the problem why we wrote the book, is that a lot of people don't understand what it means and what it is. And a lot of things are being thrown around if you have an MTHFR defect, you need to take a methylating agent. But taking a methylating agent without knowing whether you have the other portions of your methylation chemistry working can be quite disastrous. So the book basically is a conversation of how the symptoms and things occurred with Michelle. And then we sent her out to talk to people who have very same chemical problems, but different medical conditions on top of it, to show how basically chemistry can give you underlying symptoms that are not related to your specific disease and can be addressed in other matters other than medically, but at the same token can give you very severe symptoms. Some of the symptomatology in the book, if you listen to some of the people, you realize how serious it can be and how it can make you think so many things are wrong when it's one thing you're doing that's aggravating your whole body.
All right. Dr. Doolin and Michelle, thanks so much for giving us insight into hypermethylators. And to anyone feeling compelled now to Google this, a warning, check your sources. Patience is a virtue because rarely do we have it. Dr. Charles Dent wants to help with his book entitled 42 Days of Becoming a Powerful Person of Patience. He's got plenty of experience working with troubled students, conducting male leadership workshops, and helping parents with social emotional learning.
Well, what made me write this book for two reasons. One is I was always trying to find out what is the attitude of people who struggle with being patient. And I noticed they become rude, disrespectful, angry when situations not working for them. And I decided to do this because I thought about Jackie Robinson, how he had to be patient when he entered the league and how the league had to be patient with him because their adjustments had to be made in the process of him integrating the Major League Baseball. And so I saw the same thing that happened in people's lives when things are changing. How do I become patient in the process?
Is this like a step-by-step guide on how to become a more patient person?
Right. Because, yeah, it is. Because it became a devotional. And one of the scriptures that I took from there is when James said, be patient, let patience have a perfect works. In other words, my impatient, being impatient, told me the level of my immaturity. And so this book basically help you evaluate some things where you are in your life and how do you become this patient person, whether you with your relationship with your children, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship on your job, that how do you become a very patient person in the process? And then because a lot of times we don't understand how sometimes we become offended when things don't go our way. And so this book is helping you to deal with, I don't have to live my life being offended by everything that happens.
Right. Now, are scriptures tied in with the book?
Yes, it is. For example, like day 19 in the book about Stephen, in the book of Acts, limitless grace. We talked about this is about removing limits, because can you imagine a person who takes the limits off God? If we, you know, we don't try to play judge or jury on the situation, that's what Stephen had to learn to do when he was being stoned. He took the limits off what God can do in the whole midst of this. And so sometimes we put too many limits on God or limits on his grace when we are going through some things and not seeing how God's grace is delivering us or bringing us through some things. When I was dealing with guys with PTSD, I asked how in the world you can function so well on your job, but when you get home, you explode. So how do you balance that? So even when I have done sessions, group sessions in North Carolina and also in Tennessee, it's helping those guys deal with PTSD, helping other patients deal with mental illness. And how do I get there? By training them to be patient in the process.
Yep. Great work, Dr. Dent. Thank you. Do you have an invention or an idea on how to make something easier to do or more efficient? Mark Sansbacher is a project manager in Madison, Wisconsin. He oversees multi-million dollar projects, and because there's not a whole lot out there on innovation from the grassroots level, he wrote a book to get you going. It's entitled Project Innovation, Gaining Project Success in an Ever-Changing Environment.
There's a lot of stuff for the top down, you know, for those companies that want to be innovative, but there isn't a lot for those that are closest to the problems. You find yourself with a deadline that's really short, and the tools that you have to get the project done just won't cut it. and you need to come up with something different. In my most recent innovation, it was a new way to do construction. And it basically halved the time and cost of doing utility construction. And so it's one of those things that I have a project that I got to get done, and I found a solution, and we worked to make it viable, and the result was what we wanted to have. So that's kind of how it got started. It's for anybody. Initially, I had steered it to those that were leading projects for companies, but somebody pointed out to me that, well, anybody who has an idea can use this book, use it as a roadmap, as it were, to get from, you know, where they're at with the idea to something that's actually viable.
Are there common roadblocks to accomplishing tasks like this?
Yes, there. Obviously, there's having the right expertise to look at all the aspects of the idea to make sure that it is a good idea and actually does what you want it to do. There's always resistance to innovation that you have to overcome, and also to be able to fund the project as well. A lot of times I tell people that you need to partner up with different folks to help you with that. And one of the things I offer up is, you know, the GoFundMe. For the individual who has an idea that wants to move it forward, that's probably their best way to get started.
And these aren't necessarily projects for the masses. Are these like home projects?
It could be anything. You know, it could be an idea that you just came up with to make something simpler. It could be small, it could be large, it won't matter.
So how are you getting this book to your audience?
So on the local level, I'm going around to various libraries and hosting innovation nights for those that have an idea and want to learn how to move forward with that. People come that are curious about you know, having an innovation night. What's that, you know? And then on a more national level, I'm involving myself with like the Project Management Institute, various innovation groups to market the book as well.
All right, Mark. Very good. Thank you. Clifford Parker, a self-described jack of all trades and master of a few, sells commercial insurance, does some weekend cowboy ranching, and writes for fun because he loves to tell stories. And now he shares them in the book of Clifford.
What made me write it was my first editorial about 30 years ago now, I guess. The pastor of my church had written a story from years ago when he was a boy, and they had a dog that got sick, and they had to put the dog down. And they didn't take the sick animals up back then and carry them to the vet. You just took them out in the back 40 and you eliminated them. And a lady in the community got real all bent out of shape about him writing about eliminating a dog. And so I wrote back and I pointed out the fact, you know, this man was talking about a story 60 years ago. That's just the way life was. And she shouldn't be jumping to conclusions and fussing at people when she doesn't think about all the facts. And I wrote all of that out in an editorial. And then he wrote me back and he said, have you ever thought about writing? So that's when I started putting together the book of Clifford, which is just simply stories of my life. And my goal is to make people be happy and laugh a little bit.
All right. So these are stories from your childhood in South Texas, growing up. Do you have any favorite ones?
Okay. Well, sure. I have several, but I guess one of my most favorite was my wife and I had purchased a piece of property when we were very young, and we moved a house in. You know, you go buy a house somewhere, it's an old house, it needs remodeling. The movers pick it up and move it to your lot. So they brought this house into our property, and back in those days, all of the piping in the house had galvanized pipe for water and for butane. And so I started working on the house, and I got the water all hooked up, and I turned the water on out at the water meter and ran in the house and turned on the kitchen faucet, and I was hoping to hear that air pressure come out of the faucet, that spew of air coming out of it. I turned the faucet on, and I didn't hear any water. So I went back outside, made sure the meter was on. I came back in and walked in the kitchen. Well, then I could hear water running. I said, okay, I got water somewhere. So I went outside and looked under the house, and water was running out from under the house. And I was sick to my stomach because I said, oh, no, I got a busted water pipe under the house. So I ran back into the kitchen, and as I ran into the kitchen, I happened to run by the kitchen stove. And you ought to see how neat that the kitchen burner, that the oven on the stove looks whenever it's pumping water out of it. It's really cute. It looks like a little water fountain. What I had done is I had hooked the water line to the gas line, and I was pumping water. I was pushing water out of my stove.
Oh, my. Oh, Clifford.
That's just one of my many stories in life.
What a great story. Well, I take it you're a storyteller. I take it people know you're a storyteller, know who you are. You've sold insurance for how many years?
42.
So I would think you'd have no problem having a book signing, right?
Oh, no. I've had two of them, actually, already here in the community.
Good for you.
I sold probably 35 books each time. I've sold about 70 at book signings.
That's great.
And then I have distributed some of them around the community. I sold almost to the 300 mark.
That's great.
I'd like to reach 1,000.
Well, of course you would, Clifford, and I think you might be on your way. All right, we got to take a quick break, but we're coming right back. This is the Page Publishing Book Club.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then now's the time to call Page Publishing at 800-204-6099 and do it immediately. You see, they're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review most of the books submitted to them. And they'll even give you their feedback. And if they like what they read, Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, and other outlets. They'll handle everything. Copyright protection, printing, cover art, publicity, and editing. So if you've written a novel, a children's book, a cookbook, inspirational work, a book of poetry, or biography, and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 800-204-6099 now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call. For your free author submission kit, call Page Publishing at 800-204-6099.
We're back on the Page Publishing Book Club. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. Samantha Klein owns a hair salon in Tucson. She started her book, The Healing Magic of Love, in 2006 as a distraction from some issues in her personal life. She never intended to be a published author, but her new husband read it and convinced her otherwise. So is any of this book based on your real life?
The character and the things she goes through have nothing to do with my real life, no. But everyone I spoke to and all the articles I read said, write what you're familiar with, write what you know. So my main character, Abby, is a hairdresser and owns a hair salon because I'm familiar with that and I can write that. And it's all based primarily in Tucson, Arizona. So that's what I did. But as far as my personal life or she being me, absolutely not. I'd love to say yes, but I am 30 years older than she and not nearly as attractive and pleasingly plump. So come on.
Abby Carlson wondered sometimes, did men only see her as a trophy to be won? Was this a beautiful woman with real depth?
Beautiful woman with some depth. Abby has found success. And she's very comfortable in her life, but she has a trouble with the men she chooses to date. And she gets herself in trouble and she can't seem to find real love. So she finds it in the most unexpected of places. And I don't want to give away the whole plot of the book, but first she meets her outlaw, and then she meets her doctor, and then she meets her actor. And they're all three the same soul.
Well, you know, you say in your blurb that there were some guys threatening to kill the actor outlaw doctor guy.
Yes, he gets himself into some trouble, which is why he fights having a relationship at all, because he doesn't want to get her involved in his mayhem.
All right, so there's many layers to this story.
Actually, yes. Yes. For as slender a book as it turned out to be, there actually is. Wait for the right guy and real love will conquer all, which is the story or the hope of all modern day romantics.
Do you have any unique ways to draw attention to your work of art?
Unfortunately, I have not endeavored to do that yet.
Is there a copy in your salon?
Oh, two or three or four. And, you know, I'm on Facebook with it. And it has its own Facebook page. I thought the biggest hurdle would be getting the thing published, but I have come to find out that is not the case.
It sounds like this is a beach read.
Would you say a beach read?
Yeah, you'd take it to the beach.
I like that.
Yeah,
that would work. There's several resorts out here. So
there you go.
That would work.
John Gibson is retired in Seattle after serving in the Military Signal Corps, which explains the subject of his book, The Art of Leadership and Command.
Around the turn of the century, I was up here in Seattle, engaged in a conversation on the subject of McClellan, a Union general in the Civil War. This was at a war game convention. And I tried to explain to them that even though that history has given McClellan a bad reputation, that actually he was a very, very good general. And the reason being, he was the only general that inflicted higher casualties on Robert E. Lee than Robert E. Lee inflicted on him. Robert E. Lee being one of the great generals of all time. I started researching the subject because, you know, I was kind of curious what was the conflict in this man's reputation. And I found out he had political enemies. It's basically as simple as this. He was a Democrat and the Republicans were in power. So they didn't want a Democratic general to end the war with Robert E. Lee. McClellan was winning battles. He'd won the most important battle of the war, Antietam. That's when Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. He won that battle against Lee. And in my opinion, basically the war was over. If McClellan had stayed in command, and I have quotes from the Confederate generals that say this, that if McClellan had stayed in command, they couldn't have recovered after Antietam. But General Burnside and General Hooker lost two huge battles following McClellan's victory at Antietam, and it delayed the war for another 3 years.
Wow. So your book basically pays homage to McClellan's contribution.
Well, exactly. I explained from the beginning that I am writing this from the point of view of the soldiers and that I'm looking at the politicians very skeptically. So I state that right in my introduction. So this is what I'm trying to say, that McClellan's supporters are his soldiers. They adored McClellan. When he was relieved, there was one regiment threw their flags down in front of him, and they wanted him to march on Washington. They uncoupled his car from the railroad train and begged him to march on Washington. And he said, no, if you just, you know, follow your commander, everything's going to be all right. And he left, and he didn't even stop in Washington to talk to anyone. He just went home to see his wife, who he had spent very little time with since they had been married. They were married in 1860, and the war started in 1861. And so he did run for president against Lincoln. And in the popular vote, I have quotes that say that if 40,000 votes had been shifted, you know, to different states, that McClellan would have won the election, which makes it a fairly close election, even though in the Electoral College, McClellan only won two states. So the Electoral College and the popular vote are two different things. My book is for the academic community. I want the professors to read this book because it's written so simply, so clearly, that no one can fail to understand the message.
All right, John, thank you. Finally, Mary Jo Whitlatch has been a caretaker to her husband. And one day he started talking about his service during the Korean War. So she started taking notes. And soon those notes turned into a children's book. It's entitled Woody the Soldier Boy.
Well, my husband wasn't feeling good that day. And he started talking about the Korean War. And he just come out of the battlefront down there in Tennessee. He laid his uniform down and started walking and thumbing from Tennessee to Moundsville. And he had a broken heart, too. And so my heart went out to him, and I turned him into an 8-year-old soldier boy. He was discharged down there in Tennessee.
And he started hitchhiking back home to West Virginia?
Yes. His nickname was Woody.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I started writing a book and I turned him into an 8-year-old soldier boy. And I don't know how. I love children's books. Maybe that was the reason why I turned him into an 8-year-old soldier boy.
So the character of Woody is only 8 years old?
Yes. Well, I just started writing. I couldn't quit writing this book for some reason. And I wrote that in 1910. Well, I just started writing it, and that's the way it come out. It's a Christmas story, and we both love Christmas. Well, he worked for his grandma and Pappy. He shoveled snow to buy him presents for Christmas. And Christmas Day, he wrapped the presents, and Santa Claus came knocking, and he wanted the dog for Christmas, and Santa had the dog for him, and Santa put the star up on the Christmas tree, And it looked like a soldier angel. And he says, "Yes, sir, you are a special soldier boy." And then Santa had dinner with them. And then they prayed that they had a good Christmas.
That is such a sweet story, Mary Jo. Thank you for sharing. And thanks to all the authors who joined us with their advice and insight. Now the question is, what are you going to do with it? Take it all in and think about it, or take it all in and do something? Come on. I say, what are you waiting for? If you missed anything, just go to 710WOR.com and download the podcast. Otherwise, I'll catch you on the next edition of the Page Publishing Book Club. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.